The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Hi, good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm Sean Sayre here with you this morning, live and local in our WTBR studio, and it's Friday, April 19th. You have made it to Friday, a little bit of a gray day out there right now, but yesterday was cold and rainy. I suspect we're going to have a little better weather today, but maybe not much. Looking forward to the following hour here this morning, and you will be too. We're going to be speaking with author Joan Cohen. She's the local author of a book coming out very soon. It's called The Deep Fake. And the theme of the book, the overall theme, is artificial intelligence, AI. And we're going to have a good conversation about some of the themes in the book and where we're headed with AI and what kind of inspiration Joan took from this topic to write this book. It's very interesting. There's going to be a book signing tomorrow, as a matter of fact, right here in Pittsfield. So you'll get a chance to meet the author for yourself if you'd like as well. So lots of things to talk about here in the upcoming hour. First, let's go to the weather forecast and see what is actually in store for us today. Here we go. Berkshire
weather. WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, mostly cloudy. A slight chance of showers this afternoon. Night is cool with highs in the upper 50s. Southeast wind 15 to 20 miles per hour. Chance of rain 20%. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of showers. Lows in the lower 40s. South wind 15 to 20 miles per hour, becoming southwest after midnight, Saturday, partly sunny. A chance of showers in the morning. Breezy with highs in the mid-50s. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour, becoming west 15 to 25 miles per hour in the afternoon. Chance of rain 40%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, there you have it. Some pretty typical spring weather, I think, for us here in the Berkshires. Some rain and some 50-degree weather. Maybe a couple weeks from now we'll start to see some of that nicer spring weather come forward. All right. So welcome back again to Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR-FM, and also watching us on Access Pittsfield, Channel 1301. And I'm Sean Sayre, joined this morning by Joan Cohen. Good morning, Joan. How are you?
I'm fine. Good morning to you.
Absolutely. And thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So you are a local person and you have a book coming out, which is very exciting. And the book is called The Deep Fake. And so let's circle back a little bit and talk about you for a moment and tell us a little bit about your background, where you came from, things you did before you became an author of this book, and kind of what led you to that.
Well, I grew up in Mount Vernon, New York, if anybody is familiar with that suburb. I went to college at Cornell and was an English major and never in a million years dreamed that I would know anything about AI. I don't think anybody knew what AI was back then. I went on to a job in the publishing field, which I despised. And then my husband, whom I was dating at the time, persuaded me to get into what we referred to as high tech. But, you know, technology companies,
yeah.
It was a time when the programming and computers were, it was a time of right, you know, high tide raising all boats. Mm-hmm. It was easy to get into the field. And I thought he was crazy, but I actually enjoyed it, and that became my career. So sales and marketing for the most part. Mm-hmm. I did very little programming. And I didn't become a writer until I retired. Yeah, and actually the same is true of coming to the Berkshires. We always had a vacation home here, and then after we both retired, we could move here and have this be our permanent residence. And I no longer had two Cuisinarts and two mixing bowls and so forth. So we love the Berkshires.
Yeah, and I think that's a story that a lot of people will find themselves looking at, especially here in the Berkshires. We're a very unique area in some ways for that reason. People find this as a destination and a place maybe that they sort of dip their toe in during their working lives and then say, this would be a great place to be.
Yeah.
And so technology, let's talk about that, because obviously that is something that brought you some of the basis for the new book that you've written. How did that experience sort of bring you to think about the new field of AI, right? Because we look back at the last, let's say, 50 or 60 years of technology when computers and other technology like that has become ubiquitous. And it seems to be accelerating, right? We think back about the technology of the 60s and 70s, and at this point, it seems pretty quaint compared to what, the sort of rapid acceleration that we've seen even in the last 20 years or so. So tell us about how your experiences in technology have informed you writing this book.
Well, when I was in sales, we were selling big computers that, had the power of what's on your laptop now. Mm. And I was selling to businesses. Mm-hmm. But I just developed an interest in the field. And I not the most technical aspects of it, but I was interested in the field, and that interest stayed with me. And I read all the articles in the newspaper. Mm. I read magazine articles, I read articles online. I mean, it's just like any interest that you might have that you follow. And it disturbed me that so many of the people I knew seemed to know nothing about it, and worse, just dismiss it like, well, that's in the future. Uh-huh. I don't understand. I mean, I'm talking about educated people now. Yeah, I don't understand it. I don't need to worry about it. Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, who understands AI? So I started looking on Amazon, and there were all the books about artificial intelligence were either science fiction, which now for some reason we call speculative fiction, or they were nonfiction. They were technical books, talking about the technical aspects of AI. And it's in our lives right now. I mean, it's probably in your equipment here. Mm. It's in Siri and Alexa. It's in your GPS. It's in all those algorithms Google uses to direct you to whatever websites they want to direct you to. And I just don't think people understand how pervasive it is already. Mm. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying we should be aware of it. And so I wondered why novelists, this has changed, but when I started writing, why wasn't this just part of the backdrop in novels? Because we're living with it.
Right.
And why weren't the questions and issues that get raised being talked about in these books, which are, after all, a slice of somebody's life, or whatever you metaphor you choose, the frame you put around some set of characters and circumstances.
Well, it seems like the foundation for where we're currently at with artificial intelligence has been building for a while, but now there seems to be a much clearer focus on it, right? It's in the news, as you said, often, and we're talking about it. And every development that comes out or something that we hear, we talk about it around the water cooler or something like that.
Right.
And it's starting to get into our consciousness, right? Which is different than just something, a conceptual model, which a few scientists or engineers or software programmers are involved with. Now it's sort of becoming released into the wild. And as you said, it's undergirding a lot of what we're already using.
Right. I think it's been at the level of people saying, oh, look what they're doing now. And I don't think people were getting into the ethical questions as much. But now we see the lawsuit by the New York Times saying that the AI companies cannot use all of their newspapers
or the content
to educate the the AI models,
right.
And writers saying, "Hey, you can't have AI spitting out writing that's like our writing without giving us credit." After all, creative people are not the high earners in our society. I mean, do we want to have them back to writing in a garret in Paris? You know, it's you have to have a return on your labor, or else you won't do it. You'll dig ditches or do something else that pays better.
Well, and you know, that harkens back to conversations I've had with newspaper editors, for example, from the birth of the internet. And once newspapers started making the decisions about whether their content was going to be on the internet, and they said, well, you know, what we'll do is we'll put it on the internet for free and we'll sell the advertising and that'll be our business model. And they realized pretty quickly that after a while, people didn't want to pay for the newspaper anymore, right? They just wanted to get their news by picking up their phone and scrolling through. And suddenly it's like, well, wait a minute, that's not what we intended. So in a way, AI, you know, taking all of these things from content creators and sort of sucking them in and making them part of their model, that really is getting something for nothing, which nobody likes if you're creating something, right?
Correct. I don't think that people thought about, what was coming was the ability to create text and images and voices that aren't real, but make them seem real.
Mm-hmm.
That was impossible in the beginning. I mean, if you saw a phony video of somebody, you'd look at it and say, that's obviously doctored.
Yeah.
But today,
it was easier to tell.
Yeah, you know, you can be starring in your own porn film and be shocked to find it.
Yeah.
So, who would want? But in a political arena, I mean, and this is really what worries me the most, is that we don't know what we're reading and seeing, if what we're reading and seeing is real. And it influences people. And in this period of time where you hear about silo news, where we are all able to find our own sources of news that confirm the opinions we already have, you can just shut out anything that might distort your view of reality as you see it.
Well, and as we've learned from the experience with social media, the experiment of social media over the last 15 to 20 years, you may not even be doing that yourself. There is an algorithm or a model somewhere that's deciding for you what they think the perspective of the news is that you should be getting, and that you basically at some point will not be getting anything else because that is what the model has chosen for you, right? I mean, this is shades of 1984 in a lot of ways, right? And talk about a novel that looked at technology for its time and a future scientific novel of fiction. But, you know, here we are in 2024, and does 1984 still seem like fiction to a lot of people?
Yeah. No, this is real. excuse me. When I was growing up, my father told me that the most important thing that I should read in the newspaper was the op-ed page so that I would be getting the opposing opinions and I would be able to have a balanced view of issues. Well, that just seems absolutely quaint now. I mean, you know, who's reading the physical newspaper other than people like me? And I know op-ed is, you know, we don't care what they're saying because they're not on our side. I mean, it's nuts.
Yeah, the polarization is
it's terrible.
Quite strong.
Yeah.
Joan Cohen is my guest here this morning. Joan is the author of the book The Deep Fake, which is going to be coming out very shortly.
It's out.
I'm sorry. Yeah. All right. So in that case, and as a matter of fact, there is a book signing with Joan. If you're interested in chatting with her and seeing her in person, she'll actually be at Barnes & Noble in Pittsfield tomorrow. What time is that?
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock tomorrow at Barnes & Noble over in Berkshire Crossing. And then there's a launch party that's happening at the bookstore in Lenox, and that's on May 4th.
Correct. 4 p.m.
Great. So congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the, and we kind of started down that road of the connections between business and AI, and I started to think about technology and how over the past, let's say, 150 years, every huge change in technology has brought with it some wonderful promise of making our lives easier and better and improving things. And then it usually comes with some sort of a cost on the other end, right? And I think of the huge ones like electric power, and I think of nuclear energy, and I think of computing power, the internet. And then, you know, recently social media and all these things were, you know, wonderful at the beginning. And then we started realizing that there's a dark side there. So talk about that and talk about the issues of ethics around AI in sort of perspective with some of the other things that we've seen in history.
Well, if you think about, I guess the most common example is self-driving cars. You have to ask yourself, what you would want your car to do if it was in the case of an impending accident, and either you, the driver, were going to die, or a group of children, and how would you want your car's artificial intelligence to make that decision? Mm. Now, the decision for the greater good might clearly be to spare that group of children, but would you buy a car that that was going to send you over a cliff? And this is an exaggerated case.
Sure.
But those are the kinds of issues that you can get into. We don't...
And the car would have to be programmed a certain way, right?
Right.
Because, and those are those programming commands, at least right now, are made by humans.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I mean, think about moral values. Do we do you believe in an eye for an eye or turn the other cheek or do things for the greater good? I mean, everybody's got a different idea. Every culture has a different idea. I mean, yeah, maybe they all come together at the top under do unto others, but people have very different ideas about what's just.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do you, and AI people will tell you, well, we're no longer programming the AI to, you know, make if this go here, if that go there. Now they just are fed monumental amounts of information, and the AI is self-teaching or self-learning, however you want to put it. And so the more data it has, the more it draws its own conclusion. Mm. Well, oh, boy, what? You know, now we don't have to worry about some programmer who believes in an eye for an eye or turn the other cheek. We have to worry about what some machine is deciding, or what some technology is deciding is the right way to act.
Well, what's interesting there, too, is you think about the educational background of some of the folks that are creating these new technologies, right? And you don't often think about a scientist or a computer programmer having a great deal of interest in ethics, for example, right? Or the humanities or the arts. I mean, maybe they are. So I won't exclude that idea, but the idea that these things have to work together, right? There has to be congruence here between them. You can't just have all technology, and you can't have just all humanities and ethics. If they're going to be worked together, you have to have both. And do you think that that's actually happening these days? You think there's enough thought being given to that while these new technologies develop?
No. I mean, I don't want to have to agree with that. Yeah. Not that I haven't worked with lots of people in technology fields who were wonderfully well-rounded Renaissance types, but also worked with a lot of people who were just brilliant in a very narrow area.
Right. And I think anyone who's been around a real technical person can attest to that in some ways. I mean, there are Renaissance people, right?
Yeah.
There are people that can live in all of those different circles on the Venn diagram, but not often. And a lot of times there are people that specialize in one and say, well, I'll leave that other stuff to someone else. That's not my area of expertise. I do this. I'm focused on this. This is what I'm going to do. And, you know, we'll let... And there's so much else that we talked about ethics. What about regulation? What about government laws? You know, and the ability of somehow constraining this new technology. But trying to constrain technology historically has also not worked very well, right?
Well, also you have to understand what you're trying to constrain. And I mean, our legislators are not to throw stones at people with gray hair, because I myself have gray hair, but a lot of them just don't understand it. So how are they going to make intelligent decisions about how to regulate it?
Yeah. Now, that would be very difficult, right? Because certainly people that are elected to office don't always have those strengths. They have other strengths, and I think generally they try to serve on committees and things like that to work to their strengths. But this is such a very specific area of technology. It must be very difficult to wrap your head around some of that and then realize that you have to somehow make laws and regulations that will work not only today, but in this rapidly changing environment, work for, you know, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. Who knows where this technology will land by then?
This is true. Yeah. When I was writing the book, which took me a long time, I ended up having to change the manuscript more than several times, because the technology I was talking about was obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then when I finally, you know, was ready for publication, I was hounding my publisher, you know, you've got to bring this out because I don't want it to be obsolete before it comes out. So,
and of course, it is a novel. It's a work of fiction with these themes of artificial intelligence and other things. So give us a bit of a synopsis, if you will, of how AI works its way into the story. What's the basis for the story of the deepfake?
It never started out or was intended to be the story of artificial intelligence.
Sure.
It really is a story of a young woman who finds herself working for a software company that's selling AI solutions among its other offerings. Mm. And her ex-husband is the one who got her into it because that was the coming field. He was the expert. And so she just, until their divorce, she did what he said. Anyway, she never expected to fall in love with a trainer, a personal trainer who worked with her in the gym in her office building. And he turned out to be an extremely bright, well-read guy, and he hated artificial intelligence. He started saying all kinds of things about it that she'd never even thought about, and she found herself defending the technology. And this ran all the way through the book. I mean, it's a story about people, and it's a story about how your professional life and your personal life can screw each other up, which I think happens a lot. I mean, there are a few people who can compartmentalize really well, but for most of us, it's inevitable. And so in the course of her discovering illegal activities in her own company and her family problems getting carrying over, the artificial intelligence becomes... It just intertwines itself because it's out there.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I think needs to happen. It needs to be, it's like in the beginning of the pandemic. Writers didn't write about the pandemic. They just wrote as if it had never happened in the characters. And then it took a while before the pandemic kind of wove itself in. Not as books about the pandemic, but just there would be people with masks or watching out for large gatherings and so forth, because it was in the scenery.
Yeah. Well, again, it reminds me of something so large and so hard to comprehend that we pass over it, right, and try to live our daily lives. And that it kind of reminds me of what we were talking about earlier in the interview, which was about AI and how it's hard to understand. We know it's there. It's under the scene, behind the scenes, but we continue to just live as we have. Sort of sounds like the pandemic, where this thing is so enormous and I can't wrap my head around the whole thing. What's happening in the world? What could happen based on what just changed from the last part of my life that I understood, and now I have to change to do something different. And AI, in a way, has the same potential, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, it when it comes down to a very micro level, and it's your life. Some of my friends wear smartwatches now, not because of worried about their fitness, but because the smartwatch detects falls. And older people, of course, have to worry about whether their bones are going to break. Mm. And so if it detects a fall, it calls the police or whatever. Well, I have dogs. I've always had dogs. And I've been falling ever since I can remember. I mean, I trip over tree roots. I slip on the ice even with crampons on my boots. Mm. And my God, if I had a smartwatch that detected every fall, I mean, the police would be in my backyard. And you start thinking, well, wait a minute, I don't know if I want this kind of technology working its way into my life. I don't care what the benefits are.
Yeah.
So it can come down to that very small level where you're online and you're looking for a new can opener, and suddenly you can't get online without your screen being filled with ads for every kind of can opener known to man.
I think everyone's had those experiences. And
yes.
You try not to go down the rabbit hole of conspiracy theories of, who's watching me now. But, there's stuff like that going on.
Yes.
And you wonder, if you're just talking to somebody about something at home on the couch and suddenly, 20 minutes later, you're looking at an ad for the thing you were talking about.
Right.
Crazy, right?
Yes.
But
scary.
Scary. not always completely true. The coincidences still happen. But I think, we want to talk more about what is truth and things like that in the second half of the show, too, because all of that seems to be coming to be called into question, right? And the basis of your book, The Deepfake, which, by the way, is out, and there is a book signing tomorrow at Barnes & Noble here in Pittsfield. At that point, you just have to figure on how that's going to play into your daily life, right? Working into the story of this book as a basis, it's still about human relationships, right?
Yes.
That's kind of, and I want to explore that more in the second half of the program, is how all this technology and all the things that we choose to have in our lives or they're forced upon us because they're going to be there and they're going to be part of what we have to deal with are still affecting what we have to do with ourselves and our relationships.
I agree. heard it. An elderly woman who had just discovered how Google works, complaining that there was somebody sitting in an office in California who was deciding what she should see on her screen and what she shouldn't see. And it was amusing because she envisioned a person, but really it's much worse than that. It's an algorithm.
Yeah.
And that's you're being watched and evaluated really by something that's not human.
Yeah. And that technology is being unleashed in a way. And we think about, you know, the term hallucination, which is a very human term for a computer malfunction, right, in a way. The idea that you could put something into an AI generative model and it comes back with something that's completely unreal. That yes. did not exist, does not exist.
Right.
And yet now somehow a human who's getting that result has to determine whether that's real or not. Fascinating.
Yes. It's, well, that's the terrifying part, is that you're making decisions based on something that may not be real. Yeah. I mean, you know, philosophers have debated for centuries how do we know what reality is? Mm-hmm. You know, is it just perception, and we all have our own reality? But those debates just fade compared to this, where you actually, you know, your every one of your senses tells you that this is real. Mm. But you know, you see the president of the country, you know, looking like a degenerate on your computer, and you ask yourself, could that be true? Mm. Or what? I'm seeing it. Is seeing believing? So that's the scary part. The disinformation and misinformation can run rampant. Mm.
And we're going to talk about that kind of disinformation and where it could lead, and how it ties into the new book that Joan Cohen has written. We're speaking with the author of The Deepfake here, Joan Cohen, and this is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM. We're going to take that top of the hour break that we always do. Fascinating conversation we're having here this morning, and I know our listeners are tied to every word, and we'll be right back after this short break and investigate some of those other topics that we were talking about. 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. We will be right back after this.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
It's a revolution!
Yeah, baby, yeah!
89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield.
Support for WTBR comes from MyCom Federal Credit Union, 101 Fenn Street in Pittsfield, where their mission is to continue to promote the principle of people helping people while providing services that meet the diverse and ever-changing needs of their membership. MyCom Federal Credit Union, online at mycomcu.org. And, do you need help heating your home? Berkshire Community Action Council may be able to help. The Fuel Assistance Program is accepting new applications beginning November 1st. This program assists with your primary heating source, including all heating types. Once you're eligible for fuel assistance, you're also eligible for a discount on your electric bill. Go to bcacinc.org for more information.
Pittsfield Community Television has relaunched our website at pittsfieldtv.org with a new design to make it easier to find our live streams with PCTV Select, where you can watch live sports, city meetings, and more. Now it's simple to find our past shows on demand and future TV schedules. You can also quickly find information on how to be a member, our upcoming training sessions, and how to donate to PCTV. Check it out at pittsfieldtv.org.
Have you lost a loved one to suicide? Berkshire Coalition for Suicide Prevention wants you to know that you are not alone in your grief. There are two meetings a month of the Suicide Loss Survivors Group, one on Zoom and one in person. Go to berkshirecoalition.org for more details. You are not alone.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
Hi, my name is Bill Sturgeon. I am the host of WTBR's Morning Drive. We air every weekday morning, 7:30 to 8:30. The goal of my program is to inform, educate, and have a few chuckles along the way. We have wonderful guests, political, arts, actors, musicians, teachers. I look forward for you to listen in or watch us on PCTV. Thank you.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is Community. And from Tim's Lawn Care. It's almost time for spring cleanups. Tim's Lawn Care can also take care of your landscaping, lawn care, mulching, and more. Tim's Lawn Care, 413-281-4222, and online at timslawncarelandscaping.com.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm Sean Sayre here with you on Friday, April 19th, and we are speaking with author Joan Cohen. She has written the book, The Deep Fake, and it's all based on AI, but also human relationships, and we're going to be exploring that a little bit more in the second half of the program. First, let's go to the weather forecast from the National Weather Service and see what we have in store for us today.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, mostly cloudy. A slight chance of showers this afternoon. Night is cool with highs in the upper 50s. Southeast wind 15 to 20 miles per hour. Chance of rain 20%. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of showers. Lows in the lower 40s. South wind 15 to 20 miles per hour, becoming southwest after midnight, Saturday, partly sunny. A chance of showers in the morning. Breezy with highs in the mid-50s. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour, becoming west 15 to 25 miles per hour in the afternoon. Chance of rain 40%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, that's your weather forecast for today, and welcome back again to Morning Drive. Sean Sayre here with you, and we have Joan Cohen here again. Thanks, Joan, for being here this morning and talking to us about this fantastic, interesting topic, and of course, your book, The Deep Fake.
I should probably explain what a deep fake is.
Yeah, let's do that, because we sort of assume that people know that, but again, it's a pretty new technology, right? A word. I'm sure probably end up in the Oxford Dictionary only in the last couple of years. Tell us what a deep fake is.
A deep fake is an image that looks for all the world like it's real, and it isn't. It's completely fabricated. It could be what we think of as a video. It could be a set of images, like a short movie. It can be a phone call. It can be a picture of somebody doing something you would not expect. Mm. It's just it's a complete fake. I mean, it's putting together two words that you well know, deep and fake, mm-hmm. and it's on the computer. It's on your screen.
Yeah. And a good example of that would be what recently happened during the New Hampshire primaries, where people got a phone call, a robocall from purportedly President Joe Biden telling voters, you know what, don't waste your vote by coming out for the primary for New Hampshire. Save it for November. And obviously the potential for something like that, that one was more or less harmless, although I think that the person involved was brought up on some kind of charge, right? That you could just imagine if that was innocuous, that someone who really wanted to deceive people with that kind of media, whether it's mm-hmm. a call or a video or anything like that, and these could be bad actors from anywhere. They could be within one political party or another. It could be from a different state actor, for example, a Russia or a China or a North Korea, something like that. You just imagine all the potential for harm and for deception, right?
I don't know what we'll do if we get to a point where we cannot trust reality. We'll all have to just retreat into our own minds. And from my experience, this will sound horribly cynical, but I find that people will do pretty much anything to avoid thinking.
So you want to have the thinking done for you, basically. You want to have everything handed to you on a plate and say, okay, that's what I believe because it's right there. Now I can move on and do other things.
Right. Yeah. Thinking is hard work. Who wants to do hard work?
Mm.
The deepfake in my book, it plays a role in that it becomes, I'm trying to say this without giving away important plot points, but it really contributes to the undoing of my protagonist. Her name is Sylvie. Mm. I mean, she comes to learn a lot about the technology, not just all the wonderful things that she knows, because after all, it's creating huge strides in medicine. It's relieving doctors of all kinds of tedious tasks. It does a better job of reading radiology reports than radiologists. I mean, it's doing wonderful things, and she's been focused on the wonderful things, especially since she has this boyfriend who's arguing the other side. It's kind of a comeuppance for her, and the book has a positive ending. I don't want to say a happy ending because that sounds like it sounds like a soap opera or something. but I mean, there are directions that we can go in. And Sean, you mentioned the foreign actors.
Yeah.
I mean, that really relates to the issue of regulation. I mean, what good does it do if we regulate in this country when we have no control? And when militaries, all militaries are going, they're using the technology now. It's in drones.
Yeah.
And it's probably in other weapons. And I mean, there's no, the incentives are too great.
And of course, the other side of the story to regulating on one side, let's say in the U.S., is that our adversaries overseas will not do that regulation and will move forward with whatever development and AI that they need to gain an advantage, right? And so there's two sides of that. You want to be safe and careful and ethical and philosophical, as we talked about. And at the same time, we know that there are other people in the world that will not do that and will use that against us.
Yeah. If you are kind of tuned into the story of Sam Altman, who was the founder of, or one of the founders of OpenAI, he wanted to have a part of the business be altruistic, if you can think of a business as being altruistic, and just be very safe with AI and not allow any of the bad uses of it to take place. But then also there would be a more conventional business that was seeking profits, and the, you know, the balance was not sustainable.
Yeah.
And it ended up with him being out of the company, then coming back to the company. But ultimately, the point is, to my mind, that the profit incentive couldn't be ignored.
Of course.
Yeah, people want to do the right thing. They want the technology to be safe. But there's no way to hold back. It's like there's no way to hold back the internet. It's just you have to figure out how you're going to deal with it. I mean, some people say, I'm a Luddite and I'm I have nothing to do with technology. I don't even have a phone anymore. I mean, that's the head in the sand. I mean, you can make that decision for yourself, but unless you live on a desert island, if you have, that doesn't work.
And I think people sometimes prefer that desert island to the hustle and bustle of having to keep up with whatever new technology is happening and how is this going to affect me. And there are plenty of people that will do the same thing, let's say, for world news, where if something's going on somewhere in the world, they just don't want to know about it. It's like, it doesn't affect me. It's not at my front door.
And yet
you can't really do that, right? Because as we see, things that happen a great distance away can and do affect our daily lives here, just as AI and technology ultimately will.
Yes. Yeah. So we have to figure out how to live with it. We're all overwhelmed. I mean, I'm not the first person to say this, but I mean, we are all deluged with information about what's going on in the world, what's going on in our country, what's going on in our towns, and we're being asked to help in any way we can. I mean, you could just open your wallet and empty it, and there are so many charities, but so we all feel overwhelmed.
And if you're not careful, someone will do that for you.
Yeah, so. Right. You know, we could just feel overwhelmed. Yeah. But unfortunately, if you're going to live in the world, you have to find a way to make it all work and live your life.
Yeah.
And that is the characters in the deepfake, they learn about themselves as well as how to adjust to this world where AI is so prevalent, and how to adjust to people who have a totally different point of view, which is, and I wish I really knew the answer to that, because you know, I would be a seer, but it, you know, they worked out their own way, and that's what we ultimately, we all have to do.
Mm-hmm. Joan Cohen is my guest here this morning on Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR FM. She's the author of The Deepfake, which is a novel with a basis for with artificial intelligence, but some other themes that we do want to explore a little bit. And she does have a book signing that's coming up tomorrow at 1 p.m. at Barnes & Noble here in Pittsfield, and then a book launch party on May 4th at the bookstore in Lenox. So the human and relationship story behind the deepfake is, you mentioned the word people pleaser.
Yes.
Tell us about that and how that works its way into the story.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was sailing off in the direction of artificial intelligence. Sylvie, my lead character, is a people pleaser, and a lot of women... I have to be careful, you know, not to be, doing reverse sexism. But, traditionally women were in helping professions, and of course that's all changed now. Mm-hmm. But being a people pleaser was kind of part of the package. So, and if I'm wrong about that, then why on Amazon are there just dozens of self-help books targeted at women about how to... have self-confidence and ask for a pay raise and be out for yourself. Anyway, but Sylvie doesn't think she's a people pleaser. She thinks she is a team player, which is, of course, a much more acceptable way. I mean, and hey, it's great to be a team player in a business. But when illegal things start happening in the company, or what she perceives to be illegal, you really kind of have to take sides, and then you can't be everybody's buddy, because if you are, you're lying to somebody. I mean, it just leads you down a very bad path. I mean, it's just the way, you know, taking home pens from the office supply room is a harmless theft. But if you graduate to, it would be so terrible if I transferred money into my own account instead of some customer account. I mean, it's the proverbial slippery slope.
Yeah.
So she discovers that it isn't working for her. I mean, she gets herself into a fix, and this boyfriend of hers is just shaking his head. He can't. You know, the gym is a bad place to be arguing with somebody, especially. You know, it's like having an argument with your dentist.
Yeah.
A dentist when he has a drill in his hand. I mean, here's a guy handing you these weights and saying, you know, give me 15 without stopping, and you can't talk, or you know, an ab exercise, you can't talk.
I've never had that problem.
No, nor have I. Yeah. But, you know, it was fun to think about how it would play out.
Yeah.
So, there had to be a family problem. There had to be, in my mind, difficult people in the family and the need to pay more and more attention to the problems that we're having there, which was in Florida. Which required a lot of back and forth until the problems kind of migrated to the to the Boston area where Sylvie was living, because that's been my experience, not just for me, but for people that I know. It's very hard to keep them separate. It's okay if things are running well, you can keep them separate. But if something goes wrong, when I first went back to work, and I had all the childcare, everything worked out that you can think of. It's still a little bell would go off in my head at 3 o'clock, and I think the kids are home from school. Is the nanny having them sitting in front of I Love Lucy, or are they doing something? Are they out playing? And it's just very hard to keep them separate.
And I think you also explore some other difficult areas of relationships in the book. you go into an area of sexual assault, for example.
Right.
So talk about that and how, without giving too much away, how that's addressed and how that works into the story.
Well, sexual assault is, of course, a fact of life, unfortunately, for so many women. But if you are intent on people-pleasing, if you are trying to not to create waves, if you're worried about all the different players, the family, who are involved, it's very hard to be take the straight path that you should. I mean, after all, a sexual assault, you go to the police, you report it, and, there's legal stuff happens, maybe the person goes to jail. But in real life, relationships can be very complicated. And Sylvie pretty much gets herself into a mess. But I don't think I'm giving too much away to say that she finds her way through it. Also because she has a very close friend. I mean, friendships, relationships, this is part of how we get through life. We get through the tough times. If you are a loner, I think then when bad things happen to you, you have a much tougher time. Maybe you have a good shrink, but I mean, most of us need family and friends that we can rely on, that also are sounding boards that that help us see reality. I guess that's what I was trying to reflect. And probably I should also add that that Sylvie and her boyfriend from the gym are different religions. And they, as their relationship develops, even though neither one of them has been particularly observant religiously, it begins to get in the way, in the sense that it forces each of them to re-examine their own feelings, and they come to very different places. And Sylvie finds herself thinking more and more about religion in terms of artificial intelligence. I mean, what would happen? Right now, we laugh about robots or the robots on the factory floor and so forth, but it really is in the distant future. For real human-seeming robots and to be around us. But she just keeps thinking of what's the logical extension. I mean, I may not even be alive, but someday, there could be robots that are so persuasive, so convincing, that you know that you weren't dealing with a human. And if a robot can exhibit a sense of the spiritual, how would you know that they weren't experiencing?
You don't think that we'll be worshiping robots at some point in the future?
No, but I did see an article online when I was doing some research about some rabbi speculating what to do if a robot wanted to join a congregation.
I feel like there's a punchline there somewhere.
Yeah, I know. That's right. Three robots walk into a bar. Yeah, it's you could, your imagination could run wild here. I mean, we could all be writing novels.
Yeah. So the book, The Deep Fake, by Joan Cohen, and the The book seems to have a bit of everything. There are corporate malfeasance and relationship issues and artificial intelligence. Interesting how you wove it all together. Tell us, sort of give us an idea of your journey of writing this book as well, from the beginning when you started to have a concept to now, and what how you've grown as the book grew with you.
I tend to procrastinate, which I think is probably a common problem. And I found that in writing, that the best way to keep myself in front of my laptop and in my seat is if I am working in my mind, if I'm working on some moral problem. I mean, just the kinds of things that you think about all your life and you may not have an answer to. When I was in college, I know this will sound comical, but I was taking philosophy courses, and I literally sat in the library looking out the window, you know, sat in the stacks thinking, well, if a tree fell in a forest, really, would it make a sound if nobody could hear it? I mean, this is a cliche. But
an engineer would probably tell you yes.
Yeah, well, you start thinking about these things, and then, you know, school is over, you're out in the world, and there isn't time to think about these things. Yeah. I mean, we have jobs, we have families, we have demands, and I've realized that I'm never going to have answers to some of these questions.
Maybe some of the questions weren't meant to have answers.
Perhaps.
That's a philosophical question there by itself.
Yes, right, it is. I mean, we'll have to have another program to explore that.
Yes.
I think we all reach some sort of accommodation and that works for us as we live our lives. And for me, it's fascinating to see how different characters approach an issue. It's not just me. This goes back to my father in the op-ed page. Mm. You know, what would different people be saying about that? And that's interesting for me. So then interesting, and I can build a story around it.
Mm-hmm.
My first book had in large measure Alzheimer's disease. It was a big part of the story, and one of the reasons that was the case was because I was appalled at how, I mean, I had Alzheimer's in my family, and I was doing some fundraising, and I was appalled at how many people didn't seem to know or care. You know, they would say, oh, well, you know, Aunt Sarah is a little crazy, but she's 85. So, of course, and I'm saying, well, no, actually, either you're totally clear-minded or you have a disease. Mm. I mean, it's a disease. So it's the same thing with artificial intelligence. I just felt like, why don't people understand that this is important and that they need to engage with it? If not the technology itself, the implications, because that affects us.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even have an Alexa in my house because I'm so, you know, and I read these ads for refrigerators that can talk. I mean, I don't want my refrigerator to talk to me. I really don't, and because it would tell me that it needs to be cleaned, and that would be bad.
Unless it's going to be getting the milk for you.
Yeah, right.
Then that would be another thing.
Right. Right.
Joan Cohen is my guest here this morning on Morning Drive. She's the author of The Deep Fake, which is out now. And there is a book signing tomorrow at Barnes & Noble here in Pittsfield at 1 p.m. So if you're interested in meeting Joan and getting the book signed, that's an excellent time and place to do that. Fascinating conversation we had this morning. We explored a lot of areas, and I really appreciate you coming in. Give us, in the last 30 seconds or so that we have, where do you think we'll be with AI in 20 years? What are our lives going to be like then? And what does that novel look like?
Well, I hate to be morbid, but I'm, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be around in 20 years, and if I will. And if I am, I don't know how clear-minded I'll be, but I just think we're going to be living in a very different world.
Mm.
And it will be, we'll take it for granted, really.
Right.
So many of the wonderful things that are coming, and they really will be in every field you can think of, banking, finance, medicine, education. It's going to help enormously.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You know, I fear the wars that we can have using AI.
We'll see. It'll be an interesting time.
Yes.
Joan Cohen, thank you so much for being here this morning. It's been great talking to you. Good luck with the book. And have fun tomorrow at Barnes & Noble.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, everybody. It's been great having you here listening to us today. And we will be back again next week on Morning Drive. Thanks. Just get in my car.